Hi, this is Ken Kennedy, and this is Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone, episode 88 for Tuesday, September 9th, 2014. And I thought I just finished watching the Apple Live event, and I thought that might be a good idea for a little bit of discussion. I don't have a huge, monumental opinion or anything about it, but there were a few things that I thought were interesting, and I was willing to talk about. I mean, it sounds weird. I'm not an Apple person. I've never owned a Mac. Never owned a Mac. I've used one since Apple IIs, and the very first Macs, off and on. I've had friends or roommates or whatever that had them, so I've been familiar with them forever, and I've paid attention to them during most times. But I've never really been an Apple person. And so in general, it's pretty difficult to watch the live streams without, in fact, as near as I know, unless there's some reflector sneaky way, it's impossible to watch the live streams without a Mac or an iOS device. But I realized today, so that usually I listen to one of the live or watch one of the live blogs at TechCrunch or somewhere. I followed along in addition to watching on the Yahoo Tech one this time, just to be different. It was the first link I saw. But I realized today that since the last event, I do have an iOS device. I have my iPhone 5C from work. So I tried it out and it worked fine. I had a couple hiccups, but could have been the stream, could have very well been my Wi-Fi, which has a tendency to do that sort of thing. So, but yeah, watched it with no real issues. Saw the pretty much the whole thing. In terms of, it's interesting how it's got so much harder, hardware-wise, for Apple to surprise people. Just because there are so many, subcomponent suppliers and FTC reg, FTC, FCC, FCC, I think. Yeah, not FDA. No, Federal Trade probably is FTC. I mean, they have to put in the patent stuff and the FTC stuff and all the, and then you've got, suppliers who are having leaks over in China and blah, blah, blah. It's so difficult for hardware to be very secret. And they pretty much everything about the hardware, even the watch, but certainly the phones had been pretty much nailed already, which contrasts with the WWDC event where, Swift, the new programming language, came out of nowhere, but that's because that's all software. They could keep that bottled up inside Apple, and nobody knew anything about it. It just came out of left field. So that was neat. It was interesting to see. Yep, you saw what you expected to see. I mean, there was nice stuff. It's interesting that Apple's finally getting into NFC. I mean, it's not going to be. I wonder how easy it'll be. I guess from what I understand, it'll work. Because they said they're using the same scanners that other places are using. So I guess the payment part is pretty standardized. So this could help NFC in general, which is good. That's a notable thing. The sizes of the devices, I also read Daring Fireball, which is a Apple, pro Apple site, if whatever you want to call it. I'm not disparaging Uber or anything. I listen to his podcast and I read his site. It's funny to read sometimes, actually. But he already said basically what I thought. This was the move that Apple had to make. They may or may not want to have made it. And as he pointed out, I hadn't really counted up the generations. They were able to stick with one size, and basically one size. You had that little teeny jump with the 5. But there were seven generations of phones. They basically didn't have to change anything other than a small vertical only raise in the iPhone 5. But it was time. That's where the market is. They are losing market share, in particular to the big giant Samsung phablets. But other people are doing giant phones too. So that 5.5-inch phone, because I have a Nexus 5, which I consider about as big as I want. But there are people that love those giant phones. So, I mean, that 5.5-inch phone is going to barely get them into that market. It will, but it just barely. They're at the low end of the big giant market. That's just a move they had to make. You know, at that point they realized, you know, we've milked this cow way longer than anybody expected us to be able to, but we are losing a certain amount of upper end market share to these giant phones, so we need to make a big phone too. And having a smaller one, probably a good idea as well. So that was good. I also thought it was interesting, everyone has been hoping for the size doubling, the incrementals to go up, instead of starting at, you know, I think the phones for a while, I could be wrong, but I think the phones for a while have been 16, 32, 64 has been the options. And everybody was wanting it to rev to 32, 64, 128. And they left the base model. They kept their profit on the base model up by leaving that at 16. And then for another $100, you get a bigger bump. But good. So yeah, they lost, you know, I'm using air quotes, some money there because the cost of the freaking storage versus the price, you know, bump that they give it, they didn't lose much, and they made everybody happy. So, you know, going to your second model being a 64 gig is pretty nice. As you know, I have the biggest Nexus 5 and it's 32, and then 128. That's very nice. It was kind of a hybrid. They didn't bump up. They bumped up two more expensive classes and then left the base class at 16, which is really been hung out to dry. But that's another app, you know, another thing, not just Apple, but Apple's very good at it. And you go in to buy that, you know, cheap rock bottom $299 version, just get in the door and you end up with the, you know, with the middle or the high end storage version and a nice case and, you know, extra stuff. And oops, how'd that happen? I meant to spend $200 and I spent, you know, $550. So, seen that happen and they are very good at that, but I mean, nothing wrong with it, but, that's a clever move there. I suspect Charlotte and I were talking last night. There may very well be a birthday present for our daughter that we have just identified in the near future. we'll probably bump that up to, I'm hoping she wants the 6 and not the 6 plus, because I will spend the 100. I will probably spend the 100 either way, but I'd rather only spend it once to get that 64 gig storage rather than that 16. That would suck. So interesting, and the NFC stuff is interesting. The watch, nice, and it does some things that a you know, Android Wear doesn't do, but not that crazy. Well, I will have to see. In my opinion, nothing super phenomenally different. But I was reading on Twitter while I was watching it, and one of the conversations I was reading was Charlie Strauss, the author, was talking with some people and agreed with a guy, and I had to go back and see what he agreed on. Something that this device doesn't have, but the guy was saying, this is nice, but what he's looking for is non-invasive glucose monitoring, because he's diabetic. If he could get that in a wearable device like that, that would be a, I'm going to pull the trigger on this pretty much, you know, unless the price is insane. And Charlie agreed with that. And it seems to me, I didn't go and look it up. I mean, it does pulse, blood pressure. There was a Kickstarter project that I almost joined a few months, probably 6 months back, about they called it like the tricorder made real or something like that. It was a non-invasive device that was going to do, I don't think it did glucose monitoring. I know it did like O2, and I think it did oxygenation and blood pressure and pulse, obviously, and something else just by like holding it to your temple for a couple seconds. And they were making it more for people to use as a device that they could have in their home and regularly check their stuff with. And I think it might wirelessly send the data to a cloud service or something. I don't remember. But that sort of stuff coming. And as Charlie continued his conversation, he was like pretty much like meh on this. But on the other hand, he said, next generation will definitely be better, as they are. And probably the third generation or so you know, of this will be a must have, you know, game changing type device. And I think that's probably the right way to look at this. Just like I remember the first iPhone, I didn't have one, but I knew multiple people who did. And the difference between the G1, for example, you know, a year later, and although the first iPhone was nowhere near as powerful as, you know, they've got now, the G1 arguably was even less, relatively less. You know, no apps back then for the iPhone. You know, it took a while to get the App Store. G1, incredibly clunky. Now, though, we're sitting here with iPhone 6s and Nexus 5s and you know, these amazing devices that really can do a huge amount already. So I think a couple generations of wearable devices will give us some similar and things that you didn't imagine, you know, things that you couldn't even think about your smartphone doing. We're going to get some of the same stuff definitely with this wearable device, and it's good. I think this will be I could be wrong, but I think this will be a area in which there's much more like competition forcing things ahead, like has occurred in the smartphone market versus, for example, the TV market, where Apple's had a device forever and they, you know, they didn't make an announcement here about it. You know, it just kind of languishes. And there are some advancements among you. We've had Roku and Chromecast and stuff like that, but you know, that field is clearly not being pushed forward, you know, even though you've got groups in competition nearly as quickly as the smartphone is. And then you've also got this auto technology that both of them, you know, very similar, similar approaches. And again, I just, the car companies are so conservative on that sort of stuff. I just don't see that pushing ahead as quickly either. I think this wear will be, and this is kind of what Tim Cook was saying. He was like, this is the next chapter. I think he said the next chapter, you know, in Apple. So they are obviously at least planning on being in this for the long haul. They're planning on this being a huge product line for them. So I'm very interested in seeing where it goes. I'm very interested. Because, I mean, you know, I've run the gamut. I have a Pebble on my wrist right now, and I actually tweaked my Pebble. I have historically left it actually on the fuzzy, the watch face I use is called Fuzzy Time, where you don't actually see the time anymore. You just see rounded to the nearest 5 minutes. So it'll be like 3:15 or, you know, 1:25. And I actually kind of like it. I almost would like one that was a little fuzzier even, you know, 20 till for 10 minutes. But you know, I was like, well, there's functionality to this thing that I'm not really using. And I had already bought an app for it called Glance, which gives you kind of like a customizable screen for the front screen, and it can do various other things. And so I had bought it, or it may have even been free, but there were some premium features that I hadn't enabled. And so I went ahead and enabled premium features, which gives me a couple of other cool things. You know, so, and that's obviously generation one. Charlotte has, you know, I got her for our anniversary, a Android Wear, the LG G, man, that's a weird name. I got her the LG's Android Wear watch. And now we've got the Apple Watch. And like I said, I think this is going to be a product area that's going to iterate very quickly. It's similar to the phone in the sense, I mean, not, watches aren't disposable, but people do buy multiple, you know, people are willing to buy multiple watches, I think, you know, so a watch comes out that does some much cooler thing in a year or so, I don't think, or in 2 years, I don't think somebody's going to have a problem, you know, for an anniversary or a birthday or Christmas. They may not be buying them, you know, like just like constantly, but I can see how, they can expect to get multiple purchases out of a given person over time. And since this watch, you know, only works with iPhone, I imagine they're hoping to rope people in back into the Apple ecosystem with it. So all in all, I think it was interesting. Was worth watching. I mean, I do. I mean, I'm a tech nerd. You know, as I said, I've always been interested in the Apple events and what they're doing. You know, I don't use their products, but they're all, you know, any of the modern phones are beautiful. They all have their idiosyncrasies, but they're, you know, powerful computers, you know, in our pocket that we live with all the time now and don't even think about it. The world we used to live in is so different. The more, you know, it's weird, you know, in many ways, the world didn't change very much. You know, you're living in a house that's 30 or 40 years old. You know, that hasn't changed, you know, cars change slowly. There's a lot of stuff that creeps along, but then there are these, you know, these other whole, you know, layers of society that are just so different now than they were, you know, even 10 years ago, much less 15, 20, 25 years ago. It's, you know, insane. It really blows my mind when I think about it. Well, I think that's it. That's my analysis, such as it is, of the Apple event. I was glad I was able to see it, and I'm looking forward to seeing them in the future because I've got my 5C now. So, you know, I got a streaming device for iOS. So that's it for today. That's Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone, available at kenzoid.com. You feel free to comment to me via my email, which is kkennedy, kkennedy, at kenzoid.com, kenzoid. My Twitter handle is kenzoid. My Google Plus and Facebook links will be in the show notes because they're longer. Let's see. And I had some link. Oh, if I can find that Kickstarter, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And this podcast is Creative Commons license. Man, I almost say absolution every time now. Attribution. Share alike, version 3.0. So thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.